Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
Hugh, thank you very much for that. Now, as we've been hearing on the show already, the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has said Britain will not accept the return of asylum seekers from the Republic who travelled here from Britain via the North. His comments follow the cancellation by the British of a meeting between Justice Minister Helen McEntee and UK Home Secretary James Cleverly. This follows controversy over assertions by our government that 80% of asylum seekers in the Republic are coming across the border from Northern Ireland. Well, to discuss this further, we're joined now by Fine Gael Senator Barry Ward and by the SDLP leader of the opposition in Stormont, Matthew O'Toole, and you're both very welcome to the programme this evening. Barry Ward, to yourself first, and that comment from Rishi Sunak, and he was pretty clear about it, that he's not interested in striking a deal with the government over the deportation issue. How does the government react to that?
Well, there's no deal to be struck insofar as there's an existing agreement which is in place and is undisturbed. And that's an agreement to which both Ireland and the UK are parties. It benefits citizens from both sides. But I think it's also important to remember that Rishi Sunak is involved in a political campaign at the moment. And really what we should be looking at is the existing practices that are operating, as far as I know, very well between the two countries, rather than any political rhetoric at the time of an election.
So he's just saying what he's saying because of the election?
No, but I mean, I don't understand why he's talking about a deal to be made. There's no deal to be made. There is an agreement in place that, as far as I know, is functioning perfectly well. So what he said doesn't really ring true with what the actual case is. We know there's a common travel area between the two countries. We know that post-Brexit, there was a deal done between Ireland and Britain in terms of an agreement to accept returns from both countries. That agreement is still in place, and I'm not aware of any problem with its operation at the moment.
Okay, and that agreement was made between the two governments. That wasn't at any higher level with the EU involved?
No, because it's a post-Brexit deal and it's in the context of the common travel area that exists between Ireland and Britain since the foundation of the state, and which is outside the provisions of the post-Brexit agreement with the European Union, although it has been endorsed by the European Union and they're aware of it, obviously, but it's an agreement between the two countries that doesn't exist, for example, between Britain and France.
All right. So just in case listeners didn't hear exactly what Rishi Sunak said today, I'll quote him. "We're not going to accept returns from the European Union via Ireland when the EU doesn't accept returns back to France, where illegal migrants are coming from. Of course we're not going to do that. I'm determined to get our Rwanda scheme up and running, and because I want a deterrent." I mean, he couldn't be clearer.
Well,
he's not
accepting returns from the European Union via Ireland. But where a person who's seeking international protection crosses the border from the UK into Ireland illegally and seeks international protection here, they're not entitled to do that. And under the agreement, they should be returned to the UK. I don't believe he's saying that that isn't going to happen. At least as far as I'm aware, that is happening on an ongoing basis. So he may not be interested in making a deal, but there's no deal to be made because there's an effective and working agreement in place.
But that is a deal, though, isn't it? I mean, could he be signalling that that deal is off now?
Well, he can't unilaterally decide that the deal is off, and he hasn't indicated anything to that effect to the Irish government. So, I mean, I don't know exactly whether I suspect he was having a go more at the European Union than he was at Ireland. But the reality is that, to the best of my knowledge, and I have spoken to officials in the department today about this, the operation of the agreement is perfectly sound as of today, and there are no issues with it. And I would be very surprised if the British government wanted to undo it, because it's a two-way deal, and it's something that the common travel agreement, as well as the deals that flow from that, benefit citizens in both jurisdictions.
Okay, well, we'll just pause and leave that there for the moment. I just want to ask you about the figures. 80% were told by Helen McEntee last week of migrants entering Ireland are coming from the north. When did the government become aware of that trend?
Well, as you're aware, Sarah, last year, certainly, at some point during the year, I'm not sure the exact date, the department had not been ascertaining from applicants how they had entered Ireland. And that changed during the year because there was a disconnect, if you like, between the number of international protection applicants and the number of people we knew were applying for asylum on arrival in an airport or a port. So the department started to count those and then ascertain from that a significant number of international protection applicants had crossed the land border between Ireland and the UK, as it were. And that's how that was established. But it was a change in the statistical gathering by the department at a point last year.
Last year. So when last year did we realise this was an issue?
I don't know the exact date, but certainly it would have taken a little bit of time of gathering those statistics to understand exactly what they meant. But I don't know the exact date when it crystallized what proportion of international protection applicants were crossing the border. But it's not, I mean, I think we would always have been aware that a certain number were crossing that land border. And it's really, I suppose, in recent times that the department has an opportunity to clarify exactly what proportion of that is. And it's obviously a very large proportion.
Okay. And where is the department getting those figures from?
Well, as I say, if you take the number of international protection applications, you can tell where they have been made. Where they're made at an airport or a port, you know that they are people who have arrived and applied for asylum or international protection on arrival. But an awful lot of applications were being made at the International Protection Office in Dublin, for example. And it wasn't clear where those people had come from, whether they had come through, for example, an airport or a port, or whether they had crossed the land border. And so the process that the department engaged in, as I understand it, is to ask those people and to ascertain from them in interviews how they had arrived in Ireland, and it's from that process that they ascertain the proportion of the international protection applicants who are crossing the border.
You'll be aware, I'm sure, that a number of refugee organisations are raising questions about those figures. I mean, for example, we have Nick Henderson from the Irish Refugee Council, quite sceptical about them, saying a person might pass through immigration control and then apply for protection at IPO. They might not want to apply at the airport or port because they think they'll be placed back on the flight and returned, putting them at risk of persecution. There might also be people here that might come here with one status, but then due to a change in circumstances might then need to apply for protection. And none of that would suggest that they're coming over the land border. So from my understanding of what you're saying, it is entirely from what the migrants are saying themselves at the IPO. That's where the information is coming from.
Yeah, as you're aware, as part of the international protection application process, they undergo an interview with an officer, somebody who's hired by the IPO to carry out that interview. It was not until last year part of the questionnaire as to how they had arrived in the state. It is now. And yes, that may well be a feature of the, insofar as the information may well be coming from the. But we also know, and I accept what the migrant council are saying, but we also know that a number of applicants are coming first to the IPO office in Dublin rather than at an airport or a port. And what the department was seeking to do was to explain how those people were arriving at the IPO in the first place rather than just not having that information. And the way that they have ascertained that is in the course of the interview. Now, I don't know, for example, to what extent migrants or international protection applicants are required to establish that as a matter of fact, or whether it's something that is just said. I can't think of any reason why they wouldn't be frank about how they had come into the country.
Okay, well, if we take the figure as read for the moment then, despite the scepticism being raised by the refugee councils, what we know now from what you're saying is that the government became aware sometime last year, we don't know when, that 80% or a very large proportion of migrants that were coming into this country were coming via the land border from the UK, which is a safe country, so they shouldn't be coming here, that 80%. How many have we deported back since the government became aware of this?
No, I'm not saying that I don't know what date. I'm sure the government knows on what date it was, and I'm not sure whether it was last year or this year. What I'm saying is that it was last year when they started a specific element of the questionnaire to ascertain that, those statistics, and obviously they've crystallised at a certain point, and I don't know when that is. But in relation to deportations, as you're aware, I don't have the exact figure of how many deportations have been made, but I can tell you that last year it was a figure around 760 in relation to applicants, and there are people whose applications have been processed and they have been denied leave to remain. But I think it's also important to remember that
the
other changes
happened. Just to be clear, you're saying 760 people were taken from Ireland and sent back to the UK specifically now, I'm asking about, because you say this is an agreement that has been working well since 2020.
No, I'm talking about deportation orders in general.
No, I'm talking about the UK.
Well, I don't have the breakdown of figures as they relate to the UK, but I think what's important to remember as well is that the figure would have changed substantially because in the last year, a huge investment was made into the IPO with the assistance of the European Union to restaff it, and the number of staff involved in making determinations of the applications was doubled, which meant that the time required to process an application has come down from 4 years to less than a year.
No, that's what I'm asking, just to be clear. Sorry, and I want to bring Matthew O'Toole in just one second.
I'll be very clear
on my question, Barry, because I'm not sure you understood the question. I'll just be a little more clear on the question that I'm asking. So you're telling me there's an agreement in place between the UK and Ireland since 2020 whereby we can return people to them and they can return people to us. And you say that agreement has been working really well and the government's going to tweak legislation tomorrow because of that High Court ruling to make sure that the legislation continues to work well and that the deal will continue to work well. I'm asking for evidence that that deal is working well, because if 80% of the migrants coming into this country are coming from the UK, can you tell me under this deal that is working well, how many people people have been sent back in the last couple of months. Do we have those figures? How do we know the deal is working well?
I did understand your question and I answered it, and I said I don't have the breakdown of the figures in relation to the UK and deportation orders. But what I was saying to you was...
How do we know the deal is working well then?
Because the department has told me, I asked them specifically about this today, and I've been told as far as they're concerned, the deal is working. And you asked me in the context of a statement by a politician in the course of an election campaign today that he wasn't interested in a deal. I was trying to explain to you the context in which that doesn't make sense to me. And I've raised the issue with the department, and my understanding is the deal continues to function well.
Okay. Matthew O'Toole, I'll come to yourself. What's your view on this idea that 80% of migrants are entering Ireland from the north?
Well, first of all, I don't know if those statistics are correct. I mean, I have no reason to... I don't have the statistical information the minister has. Clearly, there is an open land border. And so you would imagine that there are going to be people who enter the Republic from the north who are in various different categories of immigration status. That's obvious. I don't know. I can't stand over those precise statistics. I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm not in a position to endorse them. The thing that I'm most interested, though, is, I guess, first of all, to say that the Rwanda bill passed, or the act now passed by the British government, is abhorrent, it's objectionable, and it is it flies in the face of the kinds of cooperation that, frankly, people not just on these islands but across the continent of Europe need to manage the fact that there are increasing numbers of vulnerable people, in many cases, and people arriving on our shores who require humane and efficient processing, but it'll be done in a way that respects them as human beings and isn't doing what the UK government's doing. So that's a core fundamental point, number one. It is important to acknowledge, and Barry's right about this, the UK, the current Tory government, is engaged in an election campaign. What they're doing is politicking. They're seeking to do some electioneering. They are probably delighted to pick this fight in public with the Irish government. But my interest and the interest of my party is, number one, that we do not turn the protection of, in many cases, the most vulnerable people on the planet who are fleeing persecution, who do deserve international legal protection that they should be afforded, that we are not making them a political tool. But number two, we also aren't by default risking the hardening of the border on this island. And I do worry that some of the rhetoric coming from certain quarters does risk a situation where we move almost by default towards hardening a border that so many of us fought very hard to keep open, both for people and goods, over the last number of years.
And when you say from certain quarters, I mean, I haven't heard anyone suggest that there should be a hardening of the border. Perhaps you have.
Well, what I have heard, for example, is repeatedly Sinn Féin representatives, for example, talking about open borders and the fact that they oppose open borders. Well, first of all, that's a hard right dog whistle if it means that there's no immigration controls. The Republic of Ireland, like all countries, does have a set of immigration controls. You can disagree with
that. That is specifically in relation to the EU migration pact they're talking about, rather than the specific issue between the UK and Ireland.
But this is the problem. When you get into a situation where you are using hard right dog whistle like open borders, there is only one land border on the island of Ireland. My aspiration, and I assume that of Sinn Féin's, was to remove the open border on the island of Ireland. And by the way, if we are successful at doing that at some point in the future, the assumption most people make is that we would still need a form of open border under the common travel area to protect between Britain and a new united Ireland, because that's implicit in the Good Friday Agreement. So getting to this place where we are talking about open borders in order to what seems like pander to the hard right and to try and kind of show
I know a lot of people have raised concerns about the EU migration pact, and they would dispute the fact that those are hard right views that they are pushing, rather they are views
People are entitled, people are totally entitled to ask questions and to interrogate any the EU migration pact and any other piece of policy. That's completely legitimate, but it is clear that there are certain phrases that have certain residences, and they're particular, but it's not just about the hard right residences, it's about the fact that we have one open border on this island, and it's precious to quite a lot of us, actually, and it was hard won and hard protected over the last number of years. It's about protecting vulnerable people who have the right to access asylum and protect and international protection, but it's also about not by default wandering into a situation where we harden the border on this island and disrupt people's ability to move across it in a way that we all, I thought, treasured.
Okay, can I just ask you briefly? I know, Matthew, you're saying, as Barry Ward has said and many others, that Rishi Sunak is in election mode. But do you think, having been as categoric as he's been today, saying he's not interested in striking a deal, we will not accept refugee returns from Ireland, he can just walk back from that in a couple of days after this election at the end of the week or a couple of weeks?
Well, as I say, like, if you look at the record of successive British governments over the last number of years, particularly this Tory government, like, some of the frankly mad and increasingly obnoxious things they've done, including the other thing that was on the agenda between British and Irish ministers today, the Legacy Act. I mean, like, I wouldn't put anything past them. They're desperate and they're facing what is hopefully the last few months of their time in office after a decade and a half. So I don't think I would be in no way surprised if this is just rhetoric in order to appeal to electioneer. Look, okay, these issues are really important. The rights of vulnerable people are at stake. It is fair enough that people, we have to deal, migration is an issue, is a serious issue that does have to be dealt with by states. They are entitled to have serious discussions about how that operates, right, and how that, but what the UK government is doing is not that, and it's very dangerous that people on this island should not play that game and should not want to ask you briefly, where we harden the border by accident.
If you don't mind, your leader Colm Eastwood has defended the incoming mayor of Derry and Strabane, Councillor Lillian Barr, who's going to make history as Northern Ireland's first black mayor after she was subjected to targeted abuse from far-right hate mongers, including US conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. I just wanted your reaction to all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's grim, frankly. I think what's happened to Lillian, who is a first-class public representative, she will be the first black mayor in the North. I think she's the third on the island. She's a first-class representative, whatever she's a history maker, but whatever her background, she's an amazing public representative. She does not deserve what she has had, which isn't just the hard right in Ireland, but there's been a lot of that. You know, the hard right that we are seeing on the increase on our island, but also some of the most, frankly, fascistic voices in the world, on the internet, people like Alex Jones are targeting her. And I think this is why it's really important that in this day and age, all of us are careful about our language. And this does relate to the previous conversation we've had, because very quickly, the most obnoxious people can become emboldened whenever serious mainstream politicians allow things to be normalised. So Matthew, Lillian will be a great, great mayor for Derry, and I really look forward to her taking up office.
Matthew O'Toole, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you also to Barry Ward. We'll take a break.